KLYT Broadcast Studios. This is ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
ABQ Connect is sponsored in part by Bosque Home Services, heating, cooling, plumbing, roofing, and restoration services. 505-444-7200. That's 505-444-7200. Or on the web at HVACAlbuquerqueNM.com. Bosque Home Services, locally grown, locally owned. Thank you for your support of KLYT and our show, ABQ Connect. Coming up November 2nd, we have a school board election as well as a mayoral election and other things going on. And we have Celia Cortez. She's a write-in candidate for the Albuquerque Public School Board District 6. Yes. Hi, Celia.
Hi. Thank you for having me here today.
Thank you for joining. I went through APS myself. I have three younger sisters. I don't know if it's important to anybody because these schools were all brand new when I was there. So just to give you a history, I went to Hawthorne Elementary School, which is down by Los Altos, golf course. Then we were transferred to a brand new school called Hoover Aspen, which is now John Baker and Hoover.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And then I got transferred to Chelwood Elementary School. These are all now 40 plus year old schools. And I had a great experience in APS. I mean, I think I learned. I had great teachers. And as we're talking today about education in New Mexico and in Albuquerque in particular, I don't want teachers to feel unappreciated, because they are appreciated and they have a very hard job. So as we go through this, we're going to focus on, you know, some problems, but we're going to focus more on the answers. And Celia, that's why you're running for APS school board, right?
Yes. Yes.
Well, tell me what motivated you to actually get into the election and be part of it.
Well, I've, like you, been in New Mexico, born and raised here. I have the experience of both public and private schools. So I went through public schools through middle school, then ended up going to Pius.
Mm-hmm.
So I can definitely, when I went to Pius, I was a little disappointed because I was an artist as a kid and always wanted to have more art classes, but Pius didn't offer that. So I always felt like, oh, Pius isn't going to give me everything I want. But so I can look to both sides and give some pros and cons for both. But I know that we're capable of it. I mean, I know that I've had amazing teachers throughout my education, not only, you know, the elementary and middle school, but also into college. And I know that everybody that I've spoken to, all the teachers that I know, they have a real want to make this right. And I've been in situations where you have to figure out how to make something work. And I know that in the past, the board has been primarily represented with people who have been from within education and not necessarily people from a business background or a private sector. So I really feel that that might be a real change or a difference in the approach that might really help, combined with the existing board members who are from within education, to really bring about a change. And again, it's, you know, my experience it's a variety of experiences that I've had, but you step into a job and it's a difficult situation you're given, and you're supposed to figure out, how do I make this work? And I know that we can do it. I mean, I know that, like you say, I graduated, you graduated. It's going to take some work, but...
Well, I want you to know, I mean, we all know, for example, I've brought up on this program, I read the Kids Count 2021. It's produced by the Annie E. Casey Foundation. And they look at education around the country. They look at fourth grade reading scores, eighth grade math scores, and on-time graduation rates. And they rate New Mexico near the bottom, I'm just going to say. We're either last or second to last every year the last 3 or 4 years. Now, APS doesn't rank that low as a school district, but we still don't meet the expectations that even you have for the school district. Where would you like us to be?
Well, I'd really like to focus primarily in the elementary grades, because if we don't get their literacy down and their math down at those early stages, to me that's the foundation. So that would be a real focus: literacy, reading, and math and writing in the elementary. And then once the kids, we'll all be stepping into a situation, you have kids that are already in middle school and going into high school, then those I would be focused, obviously, on still getting some additional help. but really giving them, if they are not bound for college, for some trades, some experiences that will show them jobs that they can get that are good paying jobs.
You know, you mentioned trades. I went to El Dorado High School, graduated in 1976. Mm-hmm. Some of my favorite classes, I either had auto shop, I had metal working, where I learned how to make ducting and sheet metal work. And I mean, I literally could have gone right from that course and gotten a job in most places in town fabricating, you know, HVAC ducts and those kind of things. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's how advanced the program was. It's my understanding that not very many of the high schools even offer vocational trade training anymore.
Yeah, I think there's four high schools that have shop. And I think that is, you know, and I don't know whether or not we're really going to be able to put shop into every high school. Mm-hmm. But perhaps we can somehow work, you know, within districts or regions where we can say, you know, within this area we're going to have, and we'll bus the kids who really want to do that type of studying. It's going to be a lot to look at and to understand. I think we've spent a lot of money on technology, and that doesn't really teach. I would rather see, instead of a Promethean board, I'd rather see this type of equipment for kids who aren't going to be, you know, in front of a Promethean board or in front of a computer all day long. We need those alternatives.
How has remote learning because of COVID affected students in the public schools here?
This is all my conversations from parents. It's a mixed bag. Many kids actually flourished. They didn't have the distractions of a classroom. They actually did very, very well. On the other hand, there was kids who, they need that support, they need that one-on-one, and they definitely fell behind. And it was not an easy thing for the parents.
You know, before we went on the air, we were talking about equality. And the equality doesn't mean you do the same thing for everybody.
Right.
In my mind, opportunity is more important than equality. And a student, I made the illustration for you that if you and I wanted to go watch a softball game, but there was a 6-foot fence, and then maybe we had a shorter person with us, we would each say, get a box to stand on. Well, I don't need a box to stand on because I'm six. So, the shorter person could get a box the same size as mine, but they still wouldn't be able to see over the fence. But if I gave them my box, they could see over the fence. So equal opportunity is different than treating people equally. And it's meeting needs. It's getting to know people. And there's all kinds of things, emotions, background of poverty or where you're living or a million things that in their lives. And we all have something, don't we?
Yeah.
That's what I learned about the community. You just made a statement. I don't know if we can put shop in every high school. Well, I'm going to tell you I absolutely think we should have it, and we ought to figure out what the budget should done. That's what I think.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I get so excited when I think about how many teachers really care about their students. I mean, we read all the time about, you know, teachers that have elementary school students that don't have anything to eat, mm-hmm. and they're providing, you know, they're even spending their own money to try to help kids. Now, we have a ministry locally that one of our friends, Holly Slade, it's called Feed New Mexico Kids, and she provides snack packs for kids to have on the weekend.
Mm.
APS is, you know, they have some feeding programs now where kids can come in for a breakfast and a lunch every day during the week, but they don't have food on the weekend. So, I mean, we're working through all of this and trying to improve it. And my compliments to APS for, you know, thinking about that. But you want to be part of the school board. And do you agree with the safety protocols that are in place right now? I mean, we have COVID-19 issues. We have mask mandates. We have it almost seems like we're at an earthquake to go back to online learning at any moment. I don't understand it, because I'm going to compare that to, say, Terry Heisey, the head of school at Hope Christian School. They've never been out of class. They've always held in-person classes, and they've not had an outbreak. They've had a couple kids get COVID. They follow their protocols. They isolate them. They pour into them while they're at home by themselves. Mm-hmm. You know, the teachers are calling them. They've got the technologies in place so they can participate in class. So nobody's letting those kids be by themselves and not be supervised. So I look at those as best practices. If APS and any board member wanted to call Terry Heisey, I'm just telling you, I'm speaking for Terry, and he'll probably be mad at me, but I asked him this question on the air. Would you share your best practices with APS and other school districts? He says, absolutely. But you know what? They don't ever call him. Right?
Well, I think the approach that they take is is how real medicine does approach those. You take the ill, the sick, and you isolate them. You don't isolate the healthy from the rest of society because there might be a potential for illness. So we have basically kept a whole group of kids who likely would have perhaps never gotten sick and kept them from school and learning for almost a year, maybe even a little over a year, for, depending on them.
Yeah. Celia Cortez is the write-in candidate for the Albuquerque Public School Board, District 6. Now, what is a write-in candidate? And I have a question at the end, too, about how you actually do that. I've never written in a candidate before.
And so the first part of the question was?
Well, I don't even know what a write-in candidate is, so tell me.
So there's a deadline to officially sign up with Bernalillo County. I was running the race, much earlier, but through the whole process of campaigning, I met a very nice woman who was a mother of two high school girls, and she was running, and we had very similar beliefs. So I thought, you know, I don't need the glory. She wanted it. She's got kids. I said I would support her, so I backed out. Come to find out the day of when you have to submit, she found out she actually doesn't live in the district. Even though her children are allowed to go to APS, she does not live in the district. So I had 1 week to make a determination whether or not I could pull together my campaign again. And they give you 1 week, and then you are considered a write-in candidate. So it's just a timing thing. So that the ballot just can't have your name on it because it's a week late.
Okay. Well, I perceive that's going to be a little bit of a disadvantage, but you're talking to the faith community today here on KLYT. So I hope our listeners will be praying, considering what you have to say. You know, I always ask our listeners to vote their Bible if they would, because, you know, we really need to stand up for things that, you know, we were talking earlier about, you know, things that are being not taught about history. And a little bit later, we're going to talk about, we're going to be talking about, Black Lives Matter and various other organizations that have come out, and we're going to talk about critical race theory and other kinds of things that are now proposed as history. And I'm just going to say for the record, I don't think that's history. You know, history is what history is. We have forefathers that are human beings just like us, and we're flawed, but they also did some amazing things. And we need to recognize all of it and learn from all of it. Would you agree?
I would. And I hear so often now people go back and judge somebody in history for one wrong thing they've done. But really, who among us is perfect?
Yeah. Well, and I have to say, when I see amazing things that people do, I call those God things, because those don't happen because of us. Those happen because of Him. And I'm so thankful that He works through us despite our flaws. We are with Celia Cortez. She's a write-in candidate for the Albuquerque Public School Board, District 6. The election's coming up November 2nd. We'll be back with Celia. Stay with us on ABQ Connect.
It's back. It's back. The Toby Mac Kids Deep Tour 2022. Oh, Lord, featuring Toby Mac with special guest Crowder, Kane, Cochran and Company, and Tarion. Friday, February 11th at Rio Rancho Event Center. Tickets available starting September 23rd. Save 20% for a limited time with the offer code INSIDER at awakeningfoundation.com. Brought to you by Food for the Hungry and Altrua Health Share Ministries, an Awakening Foundation event.
I'm Johnny Erickson Tata, and don't think me too odd, but in the morning when I wheel outside and hear the birds sing, I feel like they're actually happy, like those birds can't wait for heaven to arrive. I'm convinced that when I reach the pearly gates, I will be hearing birds sing. You know, Romans chapter 8 says that, quote, "Whatever we may have to go through now is less than nothing compared with the magnificent future God has in store for us. The whole creation is on tiptoe to see the wonderful sight of the sons of God coming into their own." Yep, all of creation is waiting on tiptoe. Right there, we've got biblical proof that even the birds are straining. They are waiting, they are watching for heaven to arrive. And if God's creation is waiting eagerly, how should you and I be anticipating the coming age, right? There's a magnificent future in store for you and me, so let's join the rest of creation Jesus is coming soon, and that is something to sing about.
Here's your chance to win a pair of tickets to the Toby Mac Hits Deep Tour coming to the Rio Rancho Events Center on Friday, February 11th. Today's code word is MOVE. Text it now to 585-LIVE. That's 505-585-5483. Winners will be selected at random on Friday, September 24th.
You're listening to KLYT. Welcome back to ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
We want to thank Ben Lucero and Indigo Mortgage for supporting the ministry of KLYT and ABQ Connect. Indigo Mortgage, 505-836-5700. That's 505-836-5700 or on the web at indigomortgage.net. Thank you, Indigo Mortgage, for your support of KLYT and ABQ Connect. Celia Cortez is in studio. She is a candidate for the Albuquerque Public School Board, District 6. Now, there's some of the current board that's going to stay in place, but everybody that was up for re-election decided not to go for re-election.
Yeah, very, very unique situation this year.
Well, and so that's why we want to get to know you. Tell us about you, Celia, where you're from, family. Tell us about you.
Okay, well, I'm born and raised here in the Albuquerque area. I have one brother.
And you were a Sartan?
I was a Sartan at St. Pius, yes, yes. When it was in the uptown area, so that's been some time ago.
Hey, trust me, I remember that because I played basketball in that gym.
Oh, okay.
I don't know when you graduated, but some great teams. Lincoln Galassini was the basketball coach when we were playing back in those days, and you won a couple state championships with guys like Danny Nunez and Jimmy Mitchum. I don't know if you remember any of those names, but yeah, those guys were it was something else. So right at the intersection of Indian School and Louisiana.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I remember.
Yep, we would sometimes sneak out off campus and go to the Jack in the Box that was across the street.
That's good. So born and raised here, mm-hmm. and family.
I don't have children.
No.
My mother's still here. I've lost my father some years back. I'm married to a very, very nice gentleman who takes very good care of me and is really very supportive of what I'm doing.
Yeah.
And actually a huge help. I do a lot of reading, trying to, you know, get a big picture of what's going on, and he helps. He rereads through everything and then takes notes so that, because I'm the type of person, I have to read things multiple times for it to stick. That's just the way my brain is. So it's nice to have him helping.
Yeah.
And I went to UNM and got a business degree, dual degree in marketing and international management. I was very, very fortunate to stay here in the Albuquerque area through all my jobs. I worked in some small companies here in very competitive markets. Then I was very fortunate from those that led to a job with FedEx, which was originally RPS. I don't know if anybody out there will remember the company name RPS, which is a offshoot of Roadway. And again, each job led to another. So that job led to something else. While I was with FedEx, I had a lot of operations experience. I had three facilities that before FedEx bought us, we were RPS and we didn't have service around the country. So we were basically bringing new business to a lot of areas. So I took over three facilities in Colorado, and Colorado is, you know, it's mountainous. So on-time service was very difficult. So it was walked in, we were unprofitable, and it was expected to be unprofitable. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we identified things that we could do, and we spent some additional monies on couriers to help us with on-time service, which providing good on-time service meant we got more customers. So then we were actually able to grow. So, you know, those types of, like, learning experiences, comparing each facility to facilities across the nation was very much a part of how I analyzed my three facilities and then made changes. And that's what I really see as a benefit for looking at the operations within APS.
You know, I'm going to skip down a little bit on our little list because you're talking about management. You're talking about motivating people. You're talking about organizing people. And that's a tough thing. But you believe those skills can do a lot to help the Albuquerque Public Schools because it's a giant district spread mm-hmm. out all over the place.
Yeah, I definitely think so. And again, I mentioned earlier, just a different approach. You know, it's when you're in the midst of something, as teachers, you feel overwhelmed. I'm sure you want more money. and you're only looking at it from your perspective. So I really feel that having some different approaches on the board, and most boards, if you look at major companies, the people that sit on the board don't necessarily have specific experience to that industry. They're bringing their general knowledge. And
that's common in business.
Exactly.
And that's kind of proven in business to be a pretty strong way to establish a board of directors.
Yeah.
So why wouldn't that be a great idea for a public school board to be diverse in that same way?
I agree. I believe in diversity.
Yeah. Amen. Well, there are people that are listening that are going to say, oh, well, we have always had people that have been 30 years in education, and maybe they're retired and they're wise sages now and they know everything about education, and bring them on the board. And you have a different perspective on that.
I'm not by any means saying that any of those people have experience isn't valid.
Mm-hmm.
But we've also had, for at least 20 years, the majority of board members have come from within education. And we have not had significant progress in our literacy. And so I think we can't keep doing what we've been doing. And any business, any normal person would say, I'm doing the same thing over and over and it's not working. We have to try something new.
I want to just share something that I've already shared with you, that I had the experience when I was in banking of going to an elementary school called Carlos Ray Elementary in Westgate Heights when I was in banking.
Mm-hmm.
And we were teaching financial literacy and some simple things, like we'd have Monopoly money and some cool little plastic quarters and dimes and things. And we'd teach kids, like if you went to a retail store, how to make sure you got the right change when you bought something. And in this particular case, I'm remembering we were talking to fourth graders. And I was so fascinated because the teacher did not speak English.
Mm-hmm.
But all of her students, and these are fourth graders, were absolutely fluent in English, and they were absolutely fluent in Spanish. And I could just tell you, and I don't know if it's because they learned two languages by the time they're in fourth grade, but these kids were really smart. And I could tell, and maybe I'm judging a book by its cover, I don't mean to do that, but I could tell that there were kids that probably were from a higher socioeconomic level than others. And there didn't seem to be any difference. They were all thriving. They were all amazing. And I was especially fascinated with, I couldn't talk to the teacher because I'm so, I should speak Spanish. I've been here my whole life, so I'm embarrassed to say I don't. Mm-hmm. But I think literacy and languages and all of those things could easily be, that curriculum could be in every school. Why don't we do that?
That's a good question. So many other countries do it. Their kids are bilingual. I think it's an advantage. It's using your brain in different ways, just like when you're doing physical, PE, when you're doing music, when you're doing art. Those are all different ways your brain is learning and working. They're all very critical to development.
Yeah, and unfortunately, we've had cuts in music programs, athletic programs, art programs, mm-hmm. and we really need to get back to making those integral to the educational process.
Yeah, imagine, I wanted to go to Del Norte because they had art classes, and I don't think that's the case anymore.
What type of art do you do now?
I'm primarily a pen and ink artist.
Mm.
And the reason I'm doing pen and ink is when I left my corporate job, I was living in Santa Fe, and I had to find a way to compete against all those amazing artists who do beautiful, huge landscape paintings. And I knew I couldn't compete against that. So nobody was doing pen and ink, and I'm pretty good at rendering. So I found my little niche.
Yeah, very nice. Well, I can draw stick figures, and you would judge them as poor.
No, don't say that.
And by the way, I have the same ability in art or in music that I have in art. My friends used to say I'm rhythmically challenged, but I wish I would have had that background. My mom was diligent about trying to teach me how to play the piano, but again, there were not enough hours in the day for her to teach me how to play music. I just did not have any of that ability. But it's fascinating to see how educators have put together programs. And again, I know there's programs around the country that are successfully teaching kids at all socioeconomic level. And I just wonder why we don't have more input and seeking out best practices from people. I've just mentioned that, heck, I wish our school board would go talk to Terry Heisey at Hope Christian School. Now, Terry's going to be, hey, why are you telling everybody to call me? But no, I just think that they're doing a really good job. I think that the Albuquerque Academy, they, you know, what a phenomenal job they're doing. Now, I understand that they have different resources than APS, but I don't think that it's that much different. And we could all, I think it really would help everybody. I mean, I know people at Academy, I know people at Hope, I know people at Bosque, and I know a ton of people in the Albuquerque Public Schools. So thankful for all of those teachers and all that they do. Let me ask you about things like critical race theory. Should they be part of the history curriculum in our public schools?
Well, when you understand what critical race theory is, I mean, first you just listen to the title of it. So it is a theory. So it's not necessarily teaching history. I absolutely believe that history should be taught, the good, the bad. Mm. You know, we are not a perfect country, but we are the only country that has fought a revolution to stop slavery. And I think very often we're led to believe that we're bad as a country, but we wouldn't have people trying to get to this country. I mean, we've seen what's happening at the southern border. People are just, they're dying to get into our country. We are not a bad country. And we can tell the bad that's happened, but there's plenty of good. So my thought on critical race theory is I don't particularly like it. It divides people. It creates a victimhood mentality. And if you happen to be white, then you will become the bad person. And for kids at any age, I think that's just putting, that's dividing people. It's not, it's actually more racist when you tell a little Hispanic like myself, yeah, you know, we were oppressed by the white man. It creates a division, and I don't think that's what we need, especially at that age, and we don't need that in this world.
Yeah, but I think it would be important to, for example, in the history of New Mexico, we know that as the Spanish came into New Mexico, there were atrocities committed against the Native American community. Yeah. We know that happened. Now, by the way, the Native American community wasn't perfect either.
Exactly.
But we are human beings.
Yeah.
I mean, we do the wrong things. It's like I learned this about 2 years ago when I was doing some study about the Constitution. I found out that, you know, many of our forefathers, when you think about the Declaration of Independence, you think about, you know, all are created equal and blah, blah, blah. When you start thinking about the authors of those documents, you find out that many of the people that signed the Constitution were slaveholders. And yet they were signing this document that actually put their lives at risk. But they weren't really willing to risk their businesses, and they thought that the slaves were integral to them being successful in business. They thought they would lose everything. And that doesn't justify having slaves. Mm-hmm. They should have let them go. But it's important for all of us to know that history, not to override it or say, wow, we're only going to recognize those perfect people, because that book would be very thin,
mm-hmm.
wouldn't it?
It would be extremely thin, I think. Yeah.
Well, I'm so appreciative that you want to serve the Albuquerque Public Schools. And I went on the website for APS. I noticed that they have a little deal that's public for people to go in as to the school board candidates. Mm-hmm. And you're in that website and you have answers to all of the things they ask you. I want to also point people to RioGrandeFoundation.org. They also provided you with a survey, mm-hmm. and a number of questions you answered, some of which I'm asking you today,
okay.
Because I was interested in them. But there's other ways besides this show that people can find out. So yeah, how else can they contact your campaign, or if they have other questions for you?
Absolutely. My website is Celia Cortez for APS. schoolboard.com. If you get there, you can get the links to any of my social media. So if somebody's on Facebook or Instagram, and I'm also sharing my information on LinkedIn. And that's probably the best way to get general information, but I am available to talk to anybody. I am still seeking information from teachers, from parents. You know, I spent basically February to now asking questions rather than saying, I'm going to come in and fix things. I wanted to find out what people thought. And I'm, even though I think I have an idea of things that will help APS, I still want to hear what people have to share.
Yeah. Well,
so my telephone number is on the website.
If you want to give it now, you're welcome to.
505-629-8995.
629-8995, and that's the phone number to Celia Cortez. If you have questions for her, she is the Albuquerque Public School Board candidate for District 6. We'll be back with another segment with Celia right after these messages. Stay with us.
Heart songs. There's a psalm for that. The Fall Sheology Study at Calvary Westside, Tuesday night, 6:30, starting October 5th. Arrive early for the pop-up market and food trucks, then stay for worship, Bible study, and fellowship. No cost, but you must register at sheology.org. Download the Calvary Church check-in app to enter weekly giveaways. The family room is available for attendees with children. Online viewing is an option, including a Zoom discussion group after the teaching. Details at sheology.org.
As you listen to The Light on KLYT, remember it's the support given by businesses like Dom Garcia Realty that make this programming possible. We'd like to thank Dom Garcia Realty for supporting Reaching New Mexico with world-class Bible teaching. Dom Garcia Realty supports KLYT and hopes you will too. Thanks, Dom Garcia Realty, a full-service brokerage assisting buyers and sellers, commercial and residential property management. Dom Garcia Realty, 899-4644.
I'm Johnny Erickson Tata, and don't think me too odd, but in the morning when I wheel outside and hear the birds sing, I feel like they're actually happy, like those birds can't wait for heaven to arrive. I'm convinced that when I reach the pearly gates, I will be hearing birds sing. You know, Romans chapter 8 says that, quote, whatever we may have to go through now is less than nothing compared with the magnificent future God has in store for us. The whole creation is on tiptoe to see the wonderful sight of the sons of God coming into their own. Yep, all of creation is waiting on tiptoe. Right there, we've got biblical proof that even the birds are straining. They are waiting, they are watching for heaven to arrive. And if God's creation is waiting eagerly, how should you and I be anticipating the coming age, right? There's a magnificent future in store for you and me, so let's join the rest of creation. Jesus is coming soon, and that is something to sing about.
You're listening to KLYT. Welcome back to ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
Celia Cortez, District 6 candidate for the Albuquerque Public School Board. Not District 6, District 6. Sorry, saying that. What are the high schools in District 6?
El Dorado, Manzano, and Sandia. And
well,
it does include the charter school that's East Mountains as well. So
oh, nice.
It does include a lot of the East Mountains, Cedar Crest, Terrace area.
I was an El Dorado Eagle.
Okay.
And sadly for me, thinking back, when the school was brand new. So that dates me a little bit. But
you might be able to go back and see that gun that you left underneath the seat.
Well, and I'm still, you know, I still try to stay involved on the athletic side of things. My friend Danny Brown is the head basketball coach at Sandia. I've had a chance to work out with some of his kids and assist in those ways and do some work with Hope Christian School. I mean, I just like children. I have five. They're mm-hmm. all great, doing well, but they're not at home anymore. So I want to, you know, keep investing and speaking into the lives of young people because I think they need that.
Yeah, thank you for doing that.
It'd be nice for there to be a vehicle and almost a recruitment of people. And I know it. I had David Piercy, who has been the president of the board. He's a very nice Christian man, very dedicated, served a lot of years. He's not going to be running again.
Mm-hmm.
And he shared with us that it's been difficult for them to have a lot of volunteerism in the school district because background checks and other things are required. Again, I'm going to make this statement. I'd love for somebody to publicly say, we need 300 volunteers and it's going to cost, I don't know how much to do background checks. Let's say it's $30,000. I don't know mm-hmm. what it will be. Or let's say it's $300,000, 100 per person. I don't know. But what I want to know is, okay, if you put that out to the public, man, I'll personally contact every church I can, have them on this radio show, and we'll mobilize a bunch of volunteers to come out and help and get background checks, and we'll figure out a way to get it paid for. There's no excuses to me.
And you never know how many people are willing to pay for their own background.
Yeah.
And how many people actually maybe have something that's current that could be utilized, depending on where they work. I spoke with several people who worked at Sandia, and there was a real want to be able to bring that level of education and knowledge to students. But, yeah, they ran into the same thing.
You know, I look at, say, biblical accounts of how elders, you know, older men, for example, would be sitting in the town square speaking to younger people, speaking into their lives. And I think about our culture. I know that that very thing is used to be prevalent among the Hispanic community, mm-hmm. where the elders were really respected and looked up to. I hope that's still true. But they need to teach us how to do that mm-hmm. in the public schools. We could have a lot of people that are retired, a lot of people that now may not have the direction and the purpose that they once had in their lives because they're retired. I bet you they would volunteer.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, we're very fortunate. We do have many organizations that are trying to do that. I'm not sure how we can work with all those different organizations, but
yeah,
I know that there's plenty of people that want to help. I mean, it's business owners, you know, teachers, people working at Sandia. There is definitely a want in this community to help APS.
So you have a business background. In the businesses you worked in, if somebody embezzled money, you would know.
Yeah, and that's, you know, part of that operations, being able to compare, to analyze last year versus previous year, even a 10-year. It's those types of documents and analysis that will make the difference. When they held a financial forum for the candidates, it appears that it appears to be a good audit process. Now, obviously, I haven't seen it. I don't know the extent of it. I don't know if it's done by department. I've heard things that I cannot and won't say because I can't confirm whether or not they're true. But obviously, the audit process is not sufficient if the problem was occurring for a good 5 years, if not more, and $5 million is missing. That's money from our kids' education. That's money that we could potentially be paying our teachers more. There's so many things that money could have been used for when we are such a poor state, so low in resources, and it's a shame to have seen what's happened.
So it appears, and most people are aware that are listening to the program, that, and I'm not even going to use a name or anything else, and it's not my intention to indict anybody or anything else, but there was a prominent person in management involved with curriculum that was misdirecting funds and has been indicted now and is going to be severely scrutinized, and the district's going to take some heat. And it's interesting what you say, that it appears there's an audit process in place, but still this happened. And I guess I have to say this. Audit has to continually change and get better, just like technology does, because there's constantly people trying to take advantage of the system. That's sin. That's that sinful nature that we all understand in the faith community. And to protect the school district, you just have to be on top of stuff. And a person like you with the management background and knowing how businesses do it could bring that additional wisdom to the district.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. Do you think that there's things that are being ignored, or do you think they're just, you just kind of go with the status quo and then all of a sudden, I guess I don't like management by urgency. I like management that's proactive and anticipatory about things that are going on. And we could run this district that way, couldn't we?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
What about recruiting teachers? Do we do a good job of recruiting teachers?
From what I'm understanding, there are fewer and fewer people who are wanting to even go into education. So that could be more of a societal issue than it is an APS issue. We're losing a lot of teachers who have been in the ranks. And, you know, that's due to their dissatisfaction of feeling like they're getting their worth, being treated like they should be. I think to a certain degree, the salary has a part to do with it, but not entirely. So many teachers, they really love what they do. But I want to make sure that teachers are paid fairly and that they're respected as well. And I don't think it happens in every case, but very often teachers feel as if they have become the babysitter, and that's not their role. They are there to teach. So I want to make sure and get back into that place where I know when I went to school and probably when you went to school, we respected our teachers. We respected anybody, any elder. And I don't know if those same expectations are put on children from their parents or even other people within the administration. All that I know is what I've heard from teachers that I'm speaking to, and that's what they're feeling.
Yeah, I have a friend of mine that retired as a biology teacher after teaching, I want to say, 12 years in high school. And he said that he'd have 25, 26 students in his class. And, of course, that was a lot of kids for a biology lab because mm-hmm. you have these tables and you try to partner everybody up and resources are limited. So he said that what would happen in a common way, and I think he taught sophomores in high school, he said there would be always one or two kids that would disrupt the whole class. And then you end up, because of the way the school's set up, he had to spend all his time trying to control those students and not teaching the other students. So we all have different ideas about what the discipline should be and the accountability should be. But again, somebody around this country is doing that right. And I'd love for even the news sources around, why don't these news reporters go find the people that are doing it right? And let's interview them. Let's mm-hmm. not just keep complaining.
Well, I've taken a lot of time to look at research. And I've actually spoken to several people in the community that have taken time to contact their then school board member to give some ideas and examples. And I'm taking those examples again now from her and other things that I've researched, and I want to see how we can apply them. And we may not be able to apply every part of them, but let's take a look at everything. We know education can succeed. We know APS has been successful. I was actually speaking to, I kind of consider her my mentor in this role. And she's an 80-year-old woman, mm-hmm. very, very smart. And I take all her advice. And, now I forgot where I was going with this.
Well, you're taking advice of somebody that's a mentor.
Right. And, we have to learn from what's working and apply what works. And, I've really taken the time to seek out what is working, and I want to take those approaches. I mean, Texas has some good examples. Mississippi has actually surpassed us. There's many, many examples. So it may be a combination of working within APS. It may even be beneficial to work legislatively to put some of this in place as well.
Well, for example, I'm confused, and this is not on our list, so I don't mean to put you on the spot, but our legislature 2 years ago, right in the middle of COVID, says, or two sessions ago, I should say, they approved $3 million to the line item that says this is for early childhood education. But what I find out is they allocate this money. Then I have David Piercy, who I told you on the program, and I said, are you going to be allocated any of this money? He looks right at me, right across where you're sitting, and says, Jim, we haven't even been contacted about what they intend to do with that money. So I call the state. From what I could basically determine from the limited responses I received is that there was no plan in place. They just got the money. That seems backwards to me.
And that's my concern. You know, we've got an infusion of federal money this year. And even the state, and I feel like there's timelines to spend that money, which is fine. You know, either you have a need or you don't. But I think we might be spending the money for the sake of spending it rather than spending where it really make a difference.
Yeah.
And that's my concern. So really prioritizing what needs to be done. And I'll give a real good example of that. Again, I'm speaking to so many different people within APS. We have middle schools and grade schools that need replaced HVACs, but yet we have been placing beautiful shade structures in a lot of these schools that cost a lot of money, but we still have not repaired the HVAC. And that's, to me, we should prioritize. I mean, the comfort of the kids and the teachers and the staff in that school probably relies more on that HVAC than that shade structure out in the parking lot.
Yeah, prioritizing spending. Again, your business background, there's always places you can spend money. There's no doubt.
Exactly.
But you have to prioritize that, especially when you have limited resources and the money's coming from taxpayers.
Mm-hmm. And we expect it to be spent wisely as taxpayers.
Talk to me about how your faith is directing your desire to help and how you feel like you need to be accountable to the public because of that.
Well, you know, when I really began to think about that I was going to run for this, I obviously spoke to my husband and I prayed on it a lot. And being an artist, I have a pretty nice life. Mm-hmm. I paint, take care of myself. But I really was called. I slept on it that night, prayed and slept on it, and I really felt this was something I needed to do. And what's been so interesting through the entire path, even when I made the decision to step out and then come back in, but all throughout this whole process, the people that have been placed in my path, I can only say it's divine intervention. It's the timing has been right. When I'm getting down, something good happens. So I believe that I'm supposed to be trying to help. I don't know if I'll get elected, but if nothing else, I want to really bring attention to what's happening at APS. And again, talk about the expectations, because we do need parents involved, and we need to respect our teachers, but have expectations for them as well. And even at the administrative level, I mean, expectations from the taxpayers of that's unacceptable to have that type of money stolen.
Yes.
And it's been happening. And, you know, and I'm a taxpayer and I have never done anything. I've never written a letter. And so this is my time to step in.
So I've got some hard questions about the teachers union and their participation. And I don't want that to sound negative. I just think it's going to be a difficult question because I've looked at what the union is doing and how they're, you know, protecting teachers and different things. And I'm really having a hard time evaluating whether they're helping education or hindering education. So when we come back, we'll have more with Celia Cortez. She's a candidate for District 6 Albuquerque Public School Board. We'll be right back.
Here's John Chitwood with an automotive analogy.
Wouldn't you agree that most people have never even read the small owner's manual that's found in the glove box of all their vehicles? That is because they think they know it already and will only open and read it in a time of an emergency. Sound familiar? There is an owner's manual that you do need to read and memorize. It's God's written word, the Bible. God is the creator and the designer, and in the Bible you will find God's design and purpose for your life and how he made a way of salvation for you and me, that we may have eternal life with him through his son, Jesus Christ. Let us remember what David said in Psalm 119, "Your word I have hidden in my heart that I might not sin against you."
An automotive analogy with John Chitwood of Southern Boulevard Automotive, 2300 Southern Boulevard in Rio Rancho, 892-2300 or southernblvdautomotive.com. Thank you, Southern Boulevard Automotive, for your support of KLYT.
Back to Genesis with Dr. John Morris, scientist with the Institute for Creation Research. Dr. Morris, what can you tell me about those huge flying reptiles?
Chris, some of the flying reptiles were as large as a mid-size aircraft. Some people have wondered how in the world they could have ever flown. As it turns out, they really couldn't fly in today's atmosphere. There's not enough air pressure to keep them up. Creationists have long supposed that the environment before the flood was quite different than now. We suspect that air pressure was quite a bit higher than now, making it more reasonable that these huge creatures could fly. Recently, an engineer built a model of one of these flying reptiles and tried to make it fly. He found that it had many wonderful adaptations to increase the flying ability, but there still wasn't enough air pressure to keep it aloft. To evolutionists, it's a big mystery, but to creationists, we at least have a plausible theory. And we get that by going back to Genesis.
For more on creation, visit our website at www.icr.org.
This is John MacArthur inviting you to join me for Portraits of Grace. Would you like self-control in your life? Here are some practical tips that help you develop it. First, start small. Begin by cleaning your room or office, and then extend that discipline to the rest of your house. Second, be on time. Learn to budget your time and discipline your desires so you arrive at places when you're supposed to. Third, organize your life. Make a daily list of things you need to do and get them in the right priority. Four, practice self-denial. Refrain from something that is all right just to remind yourself you're still in charge. Have iced tea instead of a hot fudge sundae, you know. Fifth, do the hardest job first. That'll keep you from avoiding difficult tasks. Sixth, accept correction. Constructive criticism helps you become more disciplined. And finally, welcome responsibility. Invite it. It will help you be a portrait of grace.
On KLYT, this is ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
We are back in studio with Celia Cortez. She's the write-in candidate for the Albuquerque Public School Board. That election will be held on November 2nd. Of course, in that election, we're going to be electing a mayor and some city councilors and other things. And I would say, Celia, that the school board is not second to the mayor in terms of importance. It's really important, isn't it?
It is. I mean, these are our children who, if they don't learn to read and write, they will not be able to get a decent job. They will become the parents who can't help their kids when their kids are having a hard time in school.
Yeah.
So it's a vicious circle. We have to fix it.
So yeah, how can the school board help the whole process of education? I don't mean the school board. I meant unions is what I wanted to ask you about.
Okay.
The teachers' unions are particularly a concern. I hear good and bad, but I want you to know your perspective from a positive standpoint. What can the teachers' unions do to help?
Well, you know, I feel like a lot of times when I've asked teachers, they're sharing their frustrations, I've asked, could you not go to the union? And I kind of feel like maybe they're not aware of what the union is really there for. And really, I think they're kind of put in the middle of things because the union is really more wages. And APS is management is the different component of it. So they're really kind of in the middle of everything. I will say that the union, I've had an opportunity to hear some of the new ideas that the union has. And I, at least at this point, until I know more, I'm actually very supportive of some of the things the union is presenting. And one of them is specifically an 8-hour day for teachers, which I think so many teachers end up taking work home with them, and they don't get paid for that. So if we can really allow them to have that time, they don't lug everything home. You stay at school, you get everything done, and you go home when you're done at 8 hours. That not only that, that allows for the schools to potentially be open for kids to stay if they need to, get additional help. So, and I think it's also a good way to allow the teachers to potentially earn some more money because we will have more expectations.
Okay, and I want to apply to the faith community. These are all things that Celia's talking about. Everything she's talked about, we need to pray about. We need to pray for our teachers. We need to pray for the leadership of the school district. We need to pray for the candidates. You need wisdom. You need all this. But here's another thing you need. You need us to volunteer, and APS needs to give us that opportunity to do that and to be part of that educational process and to help parents that may not be able to spend as much time with their kids. We need to be tutoring. We need to be, driving, to athletic events, and we need to be cheering. We need to donate money for uniforms. We need to do everything we can do to help that teacher that ends their 8-hour day. I know they want to pour into the lives of kids that don't get picked up on time. So there's, there's a need for us as a community to come together. So Celia, we pray that, your election process and campaigning goes well. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
ABQ Connect is presented by Bosky Heating and Cooling, 505-444-7200. Bosky Heating and Cooling, locally grown, locally owned. ABQ Connect with Jim Williams is a production of KLYT. The views expressed on ABQ Connect do not necessarily reflect the views of staff or management at KLYT. If you missed any or part of today's show, the podcast can be found at abqconnect.online.